this week I've got to revise the best shows of 2022 and explain why. Then it's a discussion on the film Glass Onion, which is now streaming on Netflix. And we have to talk about the recent drama of The Challenge. All that and a little more on this episode of Taking It Down.
An elevator tape projection.
Happy New Year to all of our listeners, and tell us your resolutions. I'm always fascinated by those. I'm Blaine Duncan. I'm one of the hosts. Taking It Down exists because I would find myself thinking about why I like what I like and why I dislike what I dislike, even if alone. I've got friends who join me, all worthy of your time. With me every week's Adam Morrow, who's an erudite musician with a penchant for literature, and Donovan Reinwald, a media specialist with encyclopedic knowledge on film and more, as well as Natalie Morrow, the first person to ask about fantasy, sci-fi comics, trashy reality TV, and Beyonce. From us, you usually get the obvious and often the obscure. But here they are, the co-host and their hellos. First, per the song, he raised a cane. It's Adam Morrow.
Blaine, I have to admit something on air here. That used to be a skip on that record. It may still be a skip.
It's the first song on
the
album.
Second.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Promised Land.
Starts so strong, and then you just got to mash that skip button.
I like that song.
I do, too. He's yet to see his glory days. You just heard him. It's Donovan Reinwald.
Thanks for having me, Blaine.
Well, I couldn't do it without you. And lastly, we're always happy to have her. And I'm here to vouch that she had no hand in blowing up the Chicken Man last night. It's our podcasting queen. It's Miss Natalie Morrow.
I have a lot of questions about that comment, but we can...
The Chicken Man.
She's not pro-Bruce, I'm here to tell you.
Oh, no.
Oh, is this a Bruce Springsteen thing?
Yeah, I was just doing Springsteen lyrics for everybody.
Blaine was just doing a bit.
Well,
the Christmas season flew by, but here we are in 2023. I think this is the year we got to reckon with AI at some point.
Oh, you're being for real?
Yeah, I really am, because I'm going to have to reckon with it in my job.
Tell me more.
Yeah, say more about that.
What is it? ChatGPT or something like that? That you can go sign on and plug in a few things, and it'll write anything for you. You can plug in your writing prompt if I've given you one.
I've seen this chatter online a bit because it overlaps. I've seen instructors talk about it and how to potentially treat it as a tool.
Yeah,
how to, because you can't beat it. It's inevitable. Kind of reminds me of how my age group was told over and over and over again that, well, you're not going to have a calculator in your pocket. So you have to learn these. And of course we do. So better to just lean into the reality, I suppose. And I've seen some folks who do like album art and poster art and that kind of thing professionally lamenting not the existence of all these AI generators, but the way that they will be used. Like, there's creative ways to use it, but like with everything, the path of least resistance will win out.
I watched a really scary movie the other day that was all about how AI got too smart and took over. So
The Terminator?
Look out, guys. It was actually the worst movie that I've ever seen. It was Moonfall. somehow became about alien AI tech ruining or attacking worlds. So, spoiler alert there. Sorry, guys.
She finished that movie before 9 a.m. too. I don't really know how she did that.
Oh, my God. That's the one where the moon's going to fall, right?
Yeah, and like, I love a disaster movie. That's why I wanted to watch that movie, but it became so just bad sci-fi and not enough big wave and earthquakes that it was bad. Do not recommend.
Scrolling through the HBO, like, leaving soon. You know how every streaming service has that little section to tell you what's going to expire or whatever? And this was before New Year's Eve, I guess. So I guess it left as we switched over to January. And San Andreas was on there. And I said, Natalie, do we need to watch this again before it goes away for up to, what, 2 months? We've seen that one at least twice.
That's like my go-to, if you're on an airplane movie, just find one about the world ending. And it's great.
Brave choice.
So, Blaine, are you scared of, is it, I'm going to have to adjust to AI? I'm genuinely interested in this because I remember in like maybe 2019, the first time that I got on a plane and it was identifying me with the camera, you know, at the gate. Like, instead of me having to show my ticket or whatever, they like wanted to facial recognition everybody. And I was very proud because I beat the machine. It couldn't recognize me, and the attendant gay person had to like manually do it the old school way. But that's kind of unnerving, right? They're like, we're observed at all times, and if we lived in bigger cities, who knows what kind of data they're compiling on top of what we're already giving them. Is it like Big Brother fear, or are you just like, I'm gonna have to learn how to integrate this into my job?
Somewhere in between. It's, is my job irrelevant?
No, right?
I don't know.
Not yet. It will be.
I just do what they tell me.
I think you can get to 25 before teaching is phased out.
Well, it won't change on the site, but I had not watched the last two episodes of Flashman is in Trouble, which none of you have started, right?
No.
I hadn't watched those last two episodes before I made my end of the year list, but that one would, I think, would even be in the top five.
After, you liked it that much?
Yeah, it was good. It's just a show about coming of age in two ways. You often hear about the coming of age stuff from teenage to adulthood or child to adult. But there's like a second or a third coming of age, I think, that if we're lucky, we'll all go through. It's like shifting from reckless college years to more firm adulthood. Well, like, what am I going to do with life now that I am probably working somewhere I might work for a while, now that I've got kids? It was just mesmerizing how the show definitely shifted whose story it was, without ruining any of the one particular story. And I read the book, and the book was really good, and did this too, but I guess seeing it on screen, seeing it acted quite well, it was powerful. I think I wouldn't recommend it to anyone who's below the age of 35. Like, if you're 33 or so, don't bother. If you're 28, it's not going to have an effect on you. But if you're 35, 40, 45...
I'll wait 2 years.
I'll say I got six months.
All right. And then dive in and stress out.
Was this good enough that you would bump? Like, would you bump another show to put it in your top 10?
Yeah. I looked at my list, and I haven't got it in front of me, but I think it would have landed around fourth.
Okay.
Like, it would have, Andor would have shifted down, I think, one. It would have slid right in there. It was just existentially excellent.
Well, I can't wait to watch it in a few years.
I mean, you can get a jump start on it and watch it soon.
This is like the maturity level, like a mature rating, but it's like, you know, you really have to be mature.
Yeah. It's not the maturity of what you can handle. Yeah. As far as what you see, it's what you've lived, the maturity. It's also very New York, which, some people can take or leave. And even with me, I can be more or less, depending on the piece of art or the show or the band or whatever. But this one was just the right amount of New York.
When you say New York, explain that to me in terms of Woody Allen movies.
Yeah, it was a little of that, but not on the level of Woody Allen. I think Woody can be a little too New York, where he loses some of his base.
Uh-huh. Was it like Royal Tenenbaums, New York?
Yes.
Okay.
There you go. Let's get into something we've all seen, Glass Onion. It's the follow-up, if not direct sequel, to writer-director Rian Johnson's 2019 film, Knives Out, which did surprisingly well. I think it's possible that you could even watch Glass Onion without having seen Knives Out, as it's more like a story within that world and not part of the first movie. Adam, did you watch Knives Out?
I didn't.
So there you go. And I think
I'm proving your point.
He's not going to
have very much like a standalone. But yeah. If y'all start cross comparing, obviously I can't weigh in there.
We won't in depth. I don't think.
Apparently, Rian Johnson was pissed that he had to call it a Knives Out mystery. Like, he just wanted it to be Glass Onion.
Mm-hmm. This particular movie, Glass Onion, was released in theaters, I think, in late November or early December, and then it did quite well there, considering that it was going to be on Netflix just a few weeks later. We will spoil Glass Onion. Doesn't sound like we're going to spoil much of Knives Out, really, but they're both very fun, entertaining movies, so come back once you've seen Glass Onion for sure. I think you'll like it. That's probably going to be, that's my overall assumption. It's kind of a movie that's what's not to like kind of thing, but we'll get into some specifics right now, so skip ahead if you need. Well, for those of us who have seen Knives Out, is it just me and Donovan, and how much did we like that?
I saw it too.
Okay, awesome. He being Rian Johnson, grabbed about having to put a Knives Out mystery?
Knives Out mystery, yeah.
It could really have worked with Benoit Blanc mystery, you know, yeah. Something like that. It's more about him being recurring. So what did you guys think of Knives Out? Just
the original one?
Yeah, the first, yeah.
That was another fun whodunit. Daniel Craig definitely gets the Good Sport Award for... And it does feature the great, you know, with his ridiculous Southern accent, it features the great line, well, the little Nazi boy was masturbating in the bathroom.
Yeah, that's a pretty good line.
It's great.
Yeah, I thought it was really good.
It's very enjoyable. It's got a great cast. Even like the supporting cast is great. Like Lakeith Stanfield is just in there as a cop. He's barely used.
I like Knives Out. I mean, y'all are saying it was fun. It was super enjoyable. The Daniel Craig accent issue is a thing that we have mentioned and can now move forward from. I thought that the mystery in Knives Out, there was like more of like a twist. It wasn't, I don't know. I thought that the story was a little bit more interesting in Knives Out, but that doesn't mean I didn't enjoy Glass Onion.
I'm exactly with you. I think I like Knives Out better. I like that the unraveling of it. But Glass Onion is still really good. Yeah, exactly.
Do you think Knives Out had a stronger supporting cast? Because it had some real heavy hitters in the...
Maybe. That's one of the components, it seems like it's going to be, of these films. I think there's another one in the works. And it's to get a stellar cast together. That's probably where a lot of the money goes. I don't suspect these films are incredibly expensive to make. You know, there's not a lot of CGI or anything weird. So you get a stellar cast and you just have them be quirky and try to solve each other's mysteries. Knives Out was a little better, I think, because it started off with me not knowing what it was going to happen. And then I went for a ride, whereas Glass Onion started, I knew it was going to be a certain type of movie.
Like you knew that it was going to be a mystery from the start?
A certain kind of mystery.
Okay.
With twists and turns and...
But I think that I think that kind of hurt it a little bit because the twist, there were more twists and turns in Knives mm-hmm. Out.
Right.
And so I came into Glass Onion expecting more, and it was just more kind of straightforward, I thought.
No, that's it. Yeah, that's kind of what I was trying to say. I think you said it a lot better. Glass Onion, I think, drew me in instantly and then lost me a little when I saw that it wasn't going to take a lot of turns.
It had one pretty big twist, right?
Yeah, we could talk about Glass Onion for sure, spoiler-wise,
okay.
Do we even want to mention Ben Shapiro?
Absolutely. Let's give that guy as much airtime as we can.
Let's give him all the air in the room. Yeah, he was on Twitter complaining about Ryan Johnson's politics and the plot, and, you know, he complained about a key element of a mystery book and film he was complaining about. And I can't remember exactly what it was, but he really made himself look like an idiot. You can go find that.
Part of his essential premise was that the movie didn't play fair with its audience. It was lazy writing, which I would...
that was it.
I would 100% disagree with.
If by play fair you mean needed more Ethan Hawke, then okay. No, but beyond their reaction to the movie, what did you think of Glass Onion? We'll separate it. I think we'll peel it away from Knives Out now and just talk about
pun.
It.
I see what you did there.
This is not a multi-million-dollar podcast for no reason.
I was going to say, that's why Blaine makes the big bucks.
So what did you think about Glass Onion, just as a standalone? Because it can be that.
We were flipping through trying to find something to watch, as I'm sure... literally millions of people were during the holidays, and the little trailer that they cut together of them arriving on the island, and I had no idea that it was attached to a mystery franchise, I guess, or ongoing story, so this is all new to me, and I thought, oh, I recognize a lot of those people. This has to be like a base level of fun, you know? Mm-hmm. They're like in a pretty place, they're all rich, shenanigans will ensue, let's watch this. I didn't go in expecting Banshees of Inisherin or Bardo or something like that, and I thought it was fun.
I enjoyed it a lot. Brian Tallarico said something like, more fun than anything else on Netflix, and I want one of these every 2.5 to 3 years.
Yeah, I thought it was a great time. It's a great way to spend the evening when you got nothing else to do. It was fun. We laughed. We cried. We didn't cry. no tears were shed. But yeah, why not?
I appreciate how self-aware it was at times, mm-hmm. like literally going to a blank screen in the middle of the proceedings so that I could press pause and go to the bathroom and make some popcorn and get a LaCroix and come back. Really appreciate that. So, and that was a fun, I like meta fiction stuff. So it's like, yeah, we're having a lighthearted time, but here we go. Let's mess with the form a little bit.
Yeah, it had a good sense of humor about itself. And I would say, I really do like Daniel Craig as an actor. And I would say, it's again, he has a light touch as Benoit Blanc. He does the silliest possible accent. It's not supposed to be any kind of realistic, you know, accent.
It has no source. Like, where is he supposed to be from?
Exactly.
I assume New Orleans, and then he's living in what seemed to be Paris or New York, you know, when he's out on his balcony.
That was funny. I expected him to be in like a mansion somewhere by a bayou or in South Alabama or something.
So are he and Hugh Grant like an item? Is that what we're supposed to assume?
I think they're married even. I think it's like, yeah, I think it's the subtext that they're married, or maybe it is text somewhere in there that...
Love it.
Yeah, I do. Because there's also a certain segment of conservative right wings that are mad about that. It's just great. So I think what I loved about it the most is that Ryan Johnson was just like, what else can I toss in here to kind of prod to get right-wing media to say something stupid? And that's kind of funny in a way.
It's impressive how little it takes to upset people.
Well, that's true too.
And this is like the most benign whodunit.
Yeah.
How can you be mad at this?
It's an insidious tool of the thought police.
Ed Norton is basically an Elon Musk character, though this had to have been made years before the Musk hatred really was ramping up.
I do like that it skewers Musk. It had to have been made before he bought Twitter.
Yeah, it had to. Yeah. There's no way it could have been.
But it skewers him so perfectly. Up to and including.
Is Ryan Johnson a prophet?
I think so.
Is it really that hard to predict the downfall of these people in these situations?
You never know.
It's a bit of a Nostradamus just writing a bunch of bullshit and like, yeah, give it some time and something's going to come true.
Don't you love Ed Norton, though, when he plays the unknowing, this movie's a little self, what was it you said, Adam? It's self-aware in a way. And then you have Ed Norton, who is totally not self-aware.
With the malapropisms, and I loved that he almost got away with it because Benoit Blanc's Achilles heel is things that are stupid.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's all stupid, and he almost gets away with it.
Yeah, Ed Norton, he puts on a good performance anytime he gets to play the bumbling, somewhat stupid guy, I guess you could call him. Though he was kind of, he ended up being mostly stupid here.
I think I enjoyed Ed Norton in this role more than I've enjoyed him in anything I've seen him in since the Grand Budapest Hotel.
Oh, really?
Yeah. When again, he was kind of that. Well, he wasn't actually quite the bumbling fool there, but he was the cop character in that, and he did a good job. But I thought he was great as a not very self-aware tech bro.
And each of these characters, almost each of them, played some form of conservative stereotype, right? Batista was the kind of alt-right.
Men's rights.
Yes.
Men's rights. That was
Men's
the one.
Men's rights.
Perfect, right?
His delivery of sorry, feminists, during his video was absolutely perfect. Him and what? Whiskey?
Whiskey's the only character whose name I could remember. By character.
Right.
Catherine Hahn is playing a liberal politician, though, right?
Who, yeah.
Governor of Connecticut.
Running for governor, yeah.
Did you vote for Donovan?
I did.
Hard not to vote for
And
Catherine
I continue
Hahn.
To.
But then you get your almost Kanye-esque type character with Kate Hudson's Birdie, where she was, you know, why can't I say that? Why can't I tweet out? You know.
Why can't I dress as a Beyonce?
Yeah, why can't I go in blackface? And they never said blackface, but it was just like so
She's
implied.
Like,
you know.
It's a tribute to Beyonce.
That was a good line.
Now, that made me laugh.
It made me think of Natalie, too, by the way. I just thought that she would really love that joke.
I laughed and looked over, and Natalie was just audibly went, oof.
I this isn't like anything big, or there's probably nothing deep in there too, but I enjoyed that it was like the first movie I've seen that took place during COVID and addressed some of that stuff, you know, like, and it's mostly humorous. Like Birdie is like, oh no, and her huge party's like, oh no, this is my bubble.
Yeah, this is my pod.
This is my pod. That's
she wears the screen mask.
Yes.
Which is nothing.
The mesh mask. Yeah.
Or even them getting the weird shot, you know, that they the super wealthy are fine.
Yeah.
You're right, Donovan. There's been other ones where it's implied. Like the first season of White Lotus, it was shot during the pandemic, and so it was fairly heavily implied that was, you could imagine a world where that's happening, but this is just explicitly stating, yes, wealthy people are on an island having a good time.
Kind of miss seeing people wearing masks. Is that weird? Like I saw them on TV wearing a mask. I was like, oh, I miss those days.
I wish I could wear one.
What an interesting little thing to do with the character of Blanc, where he's the one who takes his off last. Like, I don't know if I should take this off. Should I take it? And Ethan Hawke's like, no, you're not going to need it anymore. It was almost a signal to the audience. Like, so he's the honorable one here. Did anybody catch Miles? What's his name? Miles Braun's malapropisms when he did them initially? Did you catch any of those?
Not all of them, but a couple of them, yeah.
I just heard. I don't know that I caught them, but I think my ear maybe perked up and thought, what did he just say?
Like the in-breathening, you know, like, let's just in-breathe this moment.
It felt like they were more trying to portray him as dumb, and he put it all on black and hit and thinks that he knows everything now.
Mm-hmm.
These things are not related. His intelligence is not related to his success, and we're poking fun at that. And it was one of those things where you truly don't know a word, but you trust the person, and you can kind of contextualize what the word means, and then you go look it up later. This was the opposite of that. You know he's wrong, and you know that he's an idiot.
Ron Johnson felt like he's doing what Adam McKay tends to do, but even better with this movie.
Yeah. I would not have made that comparison, but yeah. I think you're right. I mean, it is pretty broad, but I did feel like it has a light touch with its character. It doesn't just hammer it into your head over and over again. You know, rich people bad.
I agree. Well, Knives Out had a lot of that those elements too, as far as the rich being not so, you know, moral.
They're all sympathetic and endearing in some way too.
Yeah, they are.
Find a way to
even Batista's. Even
the humor's.
Even Batista's character.
You were like, I don't hate this guy. I don't know that I'd hang out with him. Especially if he's toting that gun around in a Speedo. I do love movies that show you one point of view and then show you another one later. That's a common mystery trope, but I dig it. I do think that, I mentioned it already, Ethan Hawke's all too brief appearance was a nice little red herring. You kept thinking he was going to come back. I kept thinking. But we can't dismiss the movie or say goodbye to our discussion on it without talking about Janelle Monáe.
She's great.
She was great.
Yeah.
My experience of it is watching the first sort of half of that movie before you find out that that there was the diary and she was the twin, that she plays it super straight, but it's kind of feels like stuff doesn't add up 100% with her.
Straight but stilted, right?
Yeah. And then you go and then you find out what's really going on and it all kind of clicks. And I felt like that was a good way to play fair with me as an audience member while not really affecting the tenor of your revelation at all.
Because it could still, she plays it so well that this could be someone who is really pissed but unsure how to engage with. I mean, that's what you're saying. I know, I'm just parroting things here. But it was an impressive performance.
I'm glad that they, and when I say they, I mean like Hollywood, I guess, has figured out not what to do with her, but she has kind of found her place. You know, because I feel like for a while there, it's like she's a musician, she's trying to do this thing. Then she was in commercials everywhere and on award shows everywhere, but nobody really knew. She was just always a presence and nobody really knew why or what she was doing. And I feel like in the last few years, she's excelled so highly in acting, and to see her in this kind of, you know, she's playing the straight role, but it's still in kind of that comedy arena. I think it's really great. I think she's an incredibly talented actress, and I'm glad that she is excelling there.
You're talking about not knowing what to do with her, and some of that even came after her role in Moonlight. which she was brought up. Such motherly kind of aspect to that movie. Yeah, I came in today thinking, what's to analyze? What's to talk about? Because it's just a good mystery. But I do think Janelle Monáe did some heavy lifting, having those two distinct ladies. One of them's kind of got the New York atmosphere, you know, with relationships, and the other one's from Alabama. What was she, a nurse?
What do we think of her Alabama accent?
That's a good question. I didn't feel as though it was not a North Alabama accent. It was a South Alabama accent, if it was anything. I guess it was okay. I honestly think about that. I thought, is that how Alabama people sound?
I don't think movies have quite, when it's not the accent that they grew up with, I don't think that movies have 100% nailed a Southern accent.
Yeah.
Danny McBride is one of the only people I can think of who has like a really like legit Southern accent. That's just how he sounds.
Lucas Black, who played the kid in Sling Blade, he's actually on one of the CSI now. He plays a New Orleans cop, and he still has
the ones that come from the South,
right,
yeah,
have it. But the ones that don't, they just struggle to find, because it's like y'all are talking about which part of Alabama. You know, it's so regionally specific.
Yeah,
if you don't know that, you just put a twang on it, and it just is weird.
Yeah, she was from Mobile. That's my guess.
Everyone who has to learn an accent for a movie kind of ends up sounding like Brad Pitt and Benjamin Button.
Yeah.
Foghorn Leghorn.
As
Blanc is called. All right, well, we loved it, I think, or at least thoroughly enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it. I definitely would watch another one of these.
Me too, in a heartbeat.
And I'm going to watch another one, apparently, when it's finished.
Daniel Craig was... keep him in this character for... This is the real franchise character. Forget James Bond.
Yeah, it's exactly what I thought. Let's take a break, and on the other side, we've got to talk about The Challenge. Too much drama. So, Adam has been a little absent on some of our recaps and Q&A for The Challenge on Thursdays on the site. Definitely wanted to give him a shot at some thoughts on the show, but also Natalie's an avid fan. I mentioned it in the intro. She's our go-to for trashy reality TV, which this has a 1 foot in that genre for sure. So here we are, The Challenge, Ride or Dies, Frenemy of the States, the particular episode. So if you haven't watched it, don't get spoiled. We're going to talk about everything. I'm going to toss them to you. I usually get a chance to get my thoughts in on the site in the Q&A and recaps. Cameo from Corey when Nelson calls. Yay or nay?
Yay. I love it when they bring on... They did this with Wes and Bananas and All-Stars.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's great. I think they should do some more of this. And they've done it in the past with people who are in romantic relationships with other challengers. So why not friends? Why not lifelong buddies, Nelson and Corey?
Bromantic relationships,
yes. What would Corey have done in this season? Yeah. Corey has less time for Fessy than Nelson does.
No, I was for that. I'm so glad he brought it up. Like, dude, why did you forgive Fessy so quickly? I mean, he didn't get a chance to get into it, but I was with him.
Natalie, you may have a different opinion on this because you are the source of all things challenge knowledge, but Nelson seems to me to be the biggest fan of the challenge that has been on the show for a long period of time. Like, he's just so psyched to be there and a little naive about who he trusts in the game. I mean, you root for the guy, but I put on Twitter, he's like the Andy Roddick of the challenge. Andy Roddick, not nearly as nice a guy, but like, he's going to be in the semifinals often, then the door is going to close on him, and you hate to see it.
It's funny, because I used to think Corey was the challenge's number one fan. I remember watching his Real World season and him and another guy sitting on a couch talking about the challenge. On the Real World, talking about how they can't wait to get invited on the challenge. But yeah, Nelson is just, he is just so excited to be there. But he is too, like Adam said, he's too naive. He's too nice. He's too trusting. I mean, he gave up his spot in a previous season so that Corey could continue and try and make money for his kid. Which, it's too noble. He's too good for it. Him and Amber both, they're both just too, they're too good for the challenge world.
Different forms. I think Amber is probably a better person. Strikes me as a better person.
Totally, but, you know, they're both still, it's just,
Nelson's the puppy of the challenge.
Yes, he's the happy pup running around.
And he'll even say, I know that if I make this choice, it's better for my game, but I can't make it. He knows what he should do, but he just can't do it. He's too good.
A lot of hand-wringing online about how much Fessy is hated versus if you should even pay him any attention, or maybe he's not even all that bad. And then we get that moment with him this week where he's on the couch and Mariah's talking to him. She asks him about helping her, I think, in the previous week, and he says, well, you didn't ask for help. Like, I didn't know you needed help.
I hate Fessy so much.
Is that my wife, who doesn't watch the challenge, was in the living room when that scene happened, and she said, that's such a guy response.
It's so bad.
Don't lump us all in together.
I hate Fessy so much.
That's kind of what I told her. I was like, this guy is a douche. You know, he's kind of the villain. And like Natalie saying, I don't think any of us like him.
It's not even that, like there are some characters that, like, it's still fun for them to be there, even though you don't like them, because they are at least bringing some sort of entertainment to the table. Nothing Fessy does brings any kind of entertainment. It's just frustration and just misogyny and, like, all this just garbage. And there's no, like, Bananas can say terrible things about women, stir shit up, but at least he's at least funny. You know,
there's a certain charm to his
misogyny. Like, I'm always gonna laugh when Bananas calls somebody a dumb bitch, but if Fessy does it, I'm gonna be pissed as hell.
Which, to be fair to Bananas, he hasn't done in many seasons.
He hasn't.
I think they maybe had some coaching. I'm with that. The old school villains had some charm to them, or at least you could almost picture them, like, winking to the camera when they did something. There was some self awareness and intelligence about how they played the game, and now it's just not, it doesn't have the same entertainment value. It's a lot of people who would have been wallflowers in previous seasons.
You've got somebody that's trying to make what he thinks are smart deals and, like, backstabbing people and being shady, but he's not clever about it at all. He's not good at, he's just dumb. Let's just throw it out there. He's just not smart enough to do it in a compelling way that makes good TV. It's just like, how does he keep getting invited back?
I agree with you. And I'm so glad that Jordan said it on air. The reason why he's still around is because he hasn't gone into elimination, and nobody puts him in elimination. If you go into elimination enough, you're going to lose. The odds are just not in your favor. And I had been thinking that for the last two seasons. Like, why not just put him in there? He's going to lose. Didn't he leave last season because he hit Nelson or Corey or someone? Like, he didn't get eliminated, right, last season?
Oh, yeah, I think you're right. He was in a fight, and I don't know that he hit somebody, but it was a second strike. He got two warnings and then got sent home.
A push or something. Aggressive. Just too much contact there. Jordan, speaking of Jordan, he helps in Ukraine. Did they put that in there to balance out him getting so angry at Tori?
I think they only put that in there to try to explain his headwear.
His sartorial choices are awesome, I think. Yeah. I love how it's just random. Like, I'm going to wear a bandana and a cowboy hat.
He really has been there in Ukraine driving supplies, which is just wild to think about.
Yeah.
I remember when the war, not to make it about this, but when the war broke out, imagining, like, you know, Ernest Hemingway's on the first flight into Poland to try to get to Ukraine. And, like, you kind of think, oh, my God, this is, like, the kind of situation that these people that we read their stuff would have reacted to. Mm. And he went and did it. I mean, I'm not saying that Jordan is going to be a literary mastermind or anything, but it's just interesting the personality types who are drawn to those situations. So I guess good for him.
What did you think of Tori's request of him? Basically, don't vote Fessy in, and if you do, I'm going to be angry at you outside of the show as well.
You know, we had a conversation with some friends about, you know, how much of this drama is scripted, or are the players just smart enough that they know how to kind of be their own producers? And, you know, we kind of came to the conclusion that some of them are. Like, we know Bananas plays producer a lot. I'm sure Jordan does. I don't think Tori is there. I don't think she does that. I don't think she fabricates these stories. But I think that maybe sometimes she sees Jordan doing it and she tries. This felt very like, let me see if I can stir up some drama, because nobody logically thinks this is a good idea. This is a good, smart play. But they could think, maybe if I say these words, it'll get me on camera.
Hmm.
I just don't think it worked for her like it would work for somebody a little bit more clever.
Reddit rumors are that there's a lot of big drama being edited out this season.
What sorts of things?
They didn't go into detail, from what I could tell. Just that they either think that or that's the rumor. So
I did hear one rumor. I don't remember if I told y'all about that. I think I told Adam. There was one that when Darrell and Veronica came into the house, that Veronica was trying to scare everybody into thinking that another team was coming and that it was going to be CT and Cara Maria. People got so upset in the house that, like, people were threatening to leave. So they had to, like, be like, no, she was just kidding. It's not actually happening.
Well, that may have been it.
I don't know if that's real, but that was a rumor that was going around for a little bit.
Interesting.
Speaking about drama, the fact that they go out now and come back, and the only time that there's been, like, a real late night argument, I can't remember what they were arguing about, but everybody looked around and said, we'll think more clearly in the morning. We should all just sleep on it. And they all just went to bed. It's like, man, this sucks. This is not the show they used to be, you know? There's too much on the line for them. And I'm not saying that I'm disappointed in people for acting like adults. But, I mean, for the sake of my 90 minutes once a week, you know, you just get a little angry at each other.
Mm-hmm. They're taking the trashy out of trashy reality TV.
They are, and it's disappointing.
Devin's much more likable as an underdog, isn't he?
I mean, I've always liked Devin.
Yeah, he's always been a little bit of an underdog to me.
Again, talk about people putting it into the open. He says exactly the kind of competitor that he is, and it's your favorite kind, Adam. He's the kind who swills beer every night but goes out and runs for miles the next day.
I think there's something to it. I don't think that he's the perfect example of that.
You think Kyle?
Kyle. Yeah. Kyle is the...
Oh, I miss Kyle this season.
Kyle is the... I say that not because I think everybody needs to binge drink and then exercise the next morning, but because the reason he does so well in these finals is that he is used to the suffering, the working through the hangover, the... Mm-hmm.
It's a Buddhist kind of thing.
It is.
Wasn't he the one who ran up the Rock of Gibraltar or whatever with his insulin shoved up his butt?
Mm-hmm. He is.
Yep.
Donovan, literally. This program, I'll bring you in, Donovan, just to tell you a backstory.
Thank you. Please do.
This guy was brought in from a UK reality show and had never watched The Challenge before. So he comes on and they land in Gibraltar and drive them to the Rock of Gibraltar and say, run to the top. You don't want to be last. So he has diabetes and is afraid that if he tells this show that he's completely unfamiliar with, that he has this, you know, chronic medical condition, that they will deem him unfit to compete. So he hides the insulin, as one would do, just straight up his butt. And away
as
he
one
goes
does.
Running up running up this mountain, and he survived and is still on the program.
Did the insulin survive?
I supposedly think it did.
I got two last questions for Natalie and Adam. Is Fessy and Jordan, their ongoing dilemma rivalry, is that one of the main storylines to wrap up the season? Is that what you hope?
I hope that it is the storyline that they're focusing on now because Fessy's going home soon.
Yeah.
That's my
Something's got to give there. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Same here. And the last one, Nelson's goodbye. Cringe or sad?
Nelson's always a little cringe. He's just in his feelings, and that's fine. Feel your feelings, but
with the Goo Goo Dolls playing in the background.
With the production. I meant the production of his goodbye.
That was great. That was a great choice.
I thought it was good. Yeah. I found it a little bit touching. Poor Nelson.
I mean, that first verse even says, because I don't want to go home right now.
A little on the nose.
They had him walking off. I love the... I have friends that are making their way through old seasons. And Todd Bean texted me and said, we love the shift from gym metal to dubstep. Mm-hmm. So like, I know what season they're on based on that. And now we're fully to the... You know, it was like they had the season where they put CCR in a bunch of episodes, and now we have the Goo Goo Dolls.
MTV production for The Challenge, not known for their subtlety.
No, nor should they be.
No.
That's why we like it.
It's not one we watch. All right, we'll say goodbye. We're going to be off next week, but we do know what we're going to come back with. We're all going to watch White Noise, and we're all going to watch Bardo. Both of those, I think, are on Netflix. They're both on Netflix.
So. Everybody in the world, watch Bardo.
Yeah, because we're going to come back and talk about it, and Adam highly recommends it. So let's make it a good year. Let us know some other things we can cover down the road. You'll find us at Taking It Down Pod, both on Twitter and Instagram. The Alabama Take itself is on all social media, with the exception of one or two. We're on Mastodon and Post, as well as Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Next week, we're off, but the week after, White Noise and Bardo. And we'll talk to everybody later.